Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 86 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we are live from RAFA in Chicago in the clubhouse. Scott Diedenbach, special guest Maria Larkin, myself, Bruce Buckley was there as well, although not on mic. We all went to Chicago for the evening, had a great time at RAFA. Thank you to all of them for having us out and all of you in Chicago who showed up. It was a good crowd and we got to talk cyclocross, my favorite thing. This episode is brought to you, as always, by Health IQ, healthiq.com/CXHairs. I need you to go there and learn more about life insurance. Life insurance is one of those things that you may not need now because you're still alive, but one day you won't be, and you have loved ones and family, and you want to support them, and you want them to be taken care of, and it's something that you need to plan for now. Health IQ is looking for the type of people who listen to Crosshairs Radio. They're looking for people with healthy lifestyles. They're looking for people who ride their bikes, who take care of themselves. They know that that is a good risk for them, and then they can offer lower rates to you. So, this podcast is supported by Health IQ. They're a life insurance company that celebrates the health conscious, including cyclists, and you should visit healthiq.com/CXHairs to learn more and get a free quote. Or check out their life insurance fact page to get all of your questions answered. Crosshairs Radio, also brought to you by the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. Go to wideanglepodium.com. If you've listened to episodes before this, you know that we had our big donor drive. That is now complete. It was a big success, and we thank all of you who have joined the Wide Angle Podium. But that doesn't mean it's too late for us to get new members. We want all of you to be part of the fun at the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. So, go to wideanglepodium.com/donate, become a member, help support all of the great shows on the network, like We Got to Hang Out. I know I've talked about them a lot lately, but they just interviewed Fred Armisen, and it's an amazing conversation that you need to hear. And to get more of that type of quality content, we need you to become a member, wideanglepodium.com. All right, let's head back to Chicago from last night. Scott Diedenbach, Maria Larkin, myself, Crosshairs Radio, episode 86, right now.
See, the way we start Chicago is we say, hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to Crosshairs Radio. We are live in the Chicago RAFA Clubhouse, and I am joined, as always, sometimes, by Scott Diedenbach.
By Mr. David Pallett. No.
By Scott Diedenbach.
Hey, Will, what's going on?
And then we also have our special guest, Maria Larkin.
Who doesn't have a mic.
Why don't you have a microphone? Grab that mic. There we go.
This is her first podcast.
Hello.
There you go.
I thought someone was going to hand it to me, so I don't know. I dropped the mic before I even started. So. Yeah.
You can't drop the mic before you pick it up. That's one of the podcasting or just life rules. That's a life rule. But hey, we're here to talk about cyclocross. And
sounds good.
On, as Jen mentioned, every level from local here in Chicago to what we saw this past weekend from the first World Cup to just what we think is going to happen nationally, and then anything else we want to get into. Just, you know, the thing about the podcast, the thing about just cyclocross is that there are always issues that are coming up. There's always topics to talk about. That's what sort of keeps it fun. So where should we jump in?
I think we should start with Friday night Jingle Cross.
Okay.
Let's go there. So that was a race where we saw... We want to talk with, start with the women or the men?
I think we should start with the women so yeah. Maria can jump in here early.
Absolutely.
Did you watch the men's race?
I watched about half the men's race.
Okay.
I cooled down after, and yeah. I was kind of like recovering and coughing up half a lung, so I only watched a little bit of it. And we were trying to get food in and get, you know, relaxed and start recovering straight away after Friday because we were going into Sunday so soon. So I only got to watch a little bit of it. So
you're gonna have to eat that microphone.
Okay,
and fine. Then we're gonna. There we go.
I'm trying to sound really delicate.
Well, first, you've raced Jingle Cross before, so it was not a new experience for you. But I know that talking to some of the European racers that come over, one of the complaints that they have is that it's an early World Cup race on a really hard course.
For sure. I've raced Jingle Cross, I think, back in like 2014, I think, when it was still in December or November, late November. So I've raced it when I was like a Cat 2, and I did the Cat 2 race, and it was definitely like different conditions. We had snow on Sunday, and we had, you know, it was just wet on Saturday. And then now I've raced it last year as as World Cup, and then it was definitely like one of the hardest races I've ever done last year. I don't know if I was ready for how hard it would feel, considering when I did it as a Cat 2, we didn't even get to go up the full experience of Jingle Cross.
Right, because they normally just cut down like to half of Crumpet, and you're not going up that backside either. And
yeah, I don't even think we did the run up that year. I think it, and because the conditions were so bad, I think even they might have restricted who got to run up it that year. So yeah, last year was a real eye-opener in terms of how hard it can be, and especially with the heat. I know that I live in the United States, but I definitely have an Irish complexion and Irish reaction to the heat, so last year was really, really, really hot and really hard. So this year was definitely a lot easier in that regard. Like, it was, you know, 15 or 20 degrees cooler on Sunday, so I was really happy with that.
Let's actually back up a little bit since you sort of brought it up, because I know people are here who know you, who live in Chicago, sort of know your background, but those listening may not, and it's an interesting one. You know, you are here living in the U.S., yet you are not racing this World Cup for the U.S.
Yeah, it's actually funny because when I first did Cross Vegas, the first World Cup, people were kind of like looking at me funny because they were like, who's this? I think this is an American rider, but she's not on our team. And is it some up-and-coming rider? So I was like laughing and explaining. So I'm originally from Ireland. I grew up there. I started racing in America, so I feel like an American rider in some ways. And I have gotten selection for World Cups over the years through Cycling Ireland. So that's definitely a different track to come through. But I've gone home and done nationals the last 3 years, and I've been on the podium. I'm a silver medalist in 2017, so I'm really happy with that. And so it's really great opportunity.
Yeah, and it seems like the part that I didn't know that I find interesting is that you started racing here. So the culture that you know is a U.S. racing culture, and then you're going back, racing nationals, doing that stuff in Ireland. So it's probably culture shock for you going back and seeing that scene.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, it's a completely different racing style. I started racing in Chicago with some really good girlfriends of mine who were already racing. My friend Daphne was already racing. And we definitely, like, I didn't even race cross for the first 3 years. I did track, I did a little bit of road, and I was going back and forth doing finishing my architecture degree in Dublin. So I didn't even really ride there at all. And definitely the first year I went back to nationals was a real shock to the system. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I knew that I was a good regional rider, you know, good local rider, but then, you know, there's not that many people racing in Ireland. You know, there was 15 people maybe in my first race, but at the same time I was racing as a top class, you know, top five field. So, and the conditions were just absolutely nothing like what we race here. It was, you know, mud up to your hubs, you know. And in Chicago, like, we're lucky enough that we get snow, you know, and there is definitely tough conditions here, but we don't get that sustained rain, you know, where nothing ever dries out. So that was a real eye-opener.
Oh, I didn't have anything.
Okay. Scott, I almost forgot you were there.
I'm like so...
It's like odd that, you know, I actually
I'm
get
so
to see
interested.
You in person.
I'm like listening to that. I was going to say mud up to your hubs like Chicago, but...
No, not at all. Chicago mud, I think the perfect example is like that sort of dry... It gets so cold here in the winter that it's it doesn't unfreeze underneath, and you get that inch or maybe 2 inches of like peanut butter or just grease. So going back to Ireland, it was like learning how to race all over, because it was like churn, 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 as opposed to, you know, sprint to the corner, turn, sprint, you know, there's totally a different style. So,
but you do say, like, you know, yes, you were a good regional rider, but it's Chicago region. I mean, this is like, you know, you got the East, you got, you know, the Portland, Seattle area, and then really Chicago would probably be next. As far
as ranking us?
As far as like no, but I mean, like, as far, when you think about like regions in the U.S. that you could like
think about. Can you go through those again for me?
East Coast, Victoria.
Okay. Just as long
Portland,
as
Portland, Seattle.
I just wanted to make sure that. Wait, hang on. You changed to Victoria there when you said East Coast that time. What about the rest of the East Coast?
But no. But the Chicago scene is like known. I mean, people know there's really tough racing here. So when you're good here, you're good.
Thank you. I definitely think the Chicago scene has some strong riders. There's no doubt about that. We have Sydney Gugliardo, who's a Masters national champion this past year, and we have had some great men riders come through, like David Lombardo is a really good rider but has moved over the road. But we're definitely challenged here in terms of course selection. So that's one of the challenges, is to like challenge yourself to get to that next level of riding, because Chicago's flat. You know, we have park races. Our most challenging race is probably the Montrose Harbor race, which is kind of like our Zondhoven. You know, we race on the beach, and it is a tough race. So, but in terms of elevation, in terms of like terrain that you can race on, we're limited.
On the plus side, what's the longest it takes you to get the race that is the farthest away?
I think we go to DeKalb, which is like probably the furthest race, is an hour and a half the Chai Cross Cup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or yeah, Woodstock.
There are people, especially in Texas, but also in other regions, who hear that and are envious. We're the same way in the Mid-Atlantic. You know, we are spoiled with being able to travel under an hour Saturday and Sunday and find races.
I think we have, so the Chai Cross Cup is an 11 race series. You know, it has packed fields every day, you know, 100 people per field, you know, combined. And so 11 races within an hour and a half, it's pretty good. And the racing is good. Like, you can be pushed, you know.
Cool. I like it.
All right, let's get back to today, or this past weekend.
Friday Jingle Cross?
Friday Jingle Cross. My first question for this, and I sort of mentioned it outside when we were talking beforehand. I was like, no, let's save this. You have a former world champion mountain biker who's doing that race, Annika Langved, who... I will just say, for the record, has won a cross-country world championship. I mean, the announcers like to say they were just focused on that marathon world championship, which really is great.
Way more minor than the other stuff. Yeah.
And I think that you got a call up before her Friday night.
Actually, I didn't.
You didn't?
So on Friday, I think...
Because they said 2 minutes until race time, and you all were still like not even staged yet.
So on Friday, there was some something happened with my UCI ID. So UCI IDs are brand new, and they only just came in this year. So, and I have a cycling federation that's Cycling Ireland, but I also have a cycling federation where I have my license, which is USA Cycling. So not to go into too much detail, but something got messed up. I have two UCI IDs assigned to my name. And the one that they called me up under was actually had no points associated with it.
Oh, no.
So I ended up with a last row call up.
That's like your spam UCI account.
Yeah.
Right.
Do not reply at uciid.maria.com. Yeah, so I actually was, I didn't want to like sort of pull rank, you know, but I was realized that I hadn't gotten called up. And, you know, I knew that Annika didn't have any points and she was getting called up. So I was kind of like, what's going on here? So, but... I had 0 points according to the start list.
Yeah. That would have been a wheel to follow, though.
Well, she was actually staged right beside me. So, okay. Or maybe she was over to my right. I can't really remember because I was kind of so focused on like.
I was just fascinated by being at all these mountain bike World Cups, and she's always right up there, front row, front row, front row. And I even asked her after the race. I was like, "When's the last time that you were that far back in the field?" And but she was in the front.
She was
group,
up there like
within a lap.
Yeah, within a half a lap or whatever it was. Yeah, it was funny because actually I was watching her warm up on Sunday, and I know that she rides the rollers in mountain bike for sure. They all ride rollers to warm up, and it looked like she was kind of like out of practice on. I don't think she had ridden the rollers on a cyclocross bike before.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the skinny tires, they were like moving the rollers front and back so that they could position the wheel properly, and she didn't look that comfortable on it. And I was kind of like.
I'll tell
endearing.
You where else she didn't look that comfortable. We saw her first practice lap and getting off the bike and running up Mount Crumpet. It looked like she was on eggshells. It was just like, why would I ever do this? Why would I ever get off of my bike ever?
I think, I actually rewatched the Sunday's race, and there was a scene of her coming up, and she did so awesome. That doesn't need to be said, but she did awesome. But she, almost did a Vermeersch, but on the other side, where she like pulled the bike over to the side and like it hit the back wheel, hit the planks, and then it was pretty good.
Yeah. I actually talked to Johnny Vermeersch for the first time. I felt bad. I was like, oh God, I hope he doesn't know what the Vermeersch is.
I'm sure he does.
He was good though. He gave me a NAR scale ranking of the race. So
what did he give?
I can't tell. It still hasn't come out yet.
Oh, all right. And the
video. It's a teaser.
So, Bill, I want to talk about on Friday night, I think what we saw with Katie Compton and Katie Keough is very interesting. What did you guys see there?
Maria.
I was going to say I didn't see any of it.
Oh, all right. Great.
That was too far back.
All right. Bill, what did you see?
I saw a great battle.
Yeah.
Of two riders that are extremely strong this early in the season. And I don't think it's a surprise for either of us. I mean, we saw Katie Compton last year, really a comeback year for her, starting to find that form again, find what we had seen in the past from Katie Compton. Katie Keough, when she was Katie Antonow at that time, getting second place at Valkenburg, a World Cup, just some amazing results. So we knew, even from the past before that, but we knew that she was strong and getting stronger, so that those two were battling at the front.
Yeah.
Not too big of a surprise, and great to see him. And the other thing to add to that, we really hadn't seen where Compton was at, other than what she was doing on the road. We all, you and I were both in Rochester, so we got to see Katie Keough dominate.
On Sunday,
her race. So, and even, be there with a fight with Noble on the day before. So we knew she was strong.
I think we could be seeing the beginning of almost like a second breakout year for Katie Keough. She has her first breakout year. Everybody knows who she is. But now I think we're seeing her at a level that's beyond what we've seen her before. I think when her and Katie Compton were battling around there, I happened to be standing next to Stu Thorne, and I'm like, I just looked at him, and I'm like, Caitlin's going to take this, you could just tell she had Katie Compton right where she wanted her. She's riding just off her wheel, right off the back of her, straight-faced, relaxed, calm, knew what she was going to do, waited till it was time, did it, and just won. It wasn't a question. She just had it. Control. She had control of that race the whole time, even though Compton was in front of her. She's just riding it.
Yeah, we saw that some in Rochester as well. It's really, she's such a great road racer as well. Mm-hmm. So she's so good. She's so small, just like sitting in there. You look at her front side, you're like, oh, where'd she go?
I know. Like when you stand next to her off the bike, you're like, man, you're tiny.
Oh, I know.
So. I think that happens for everyone with Bill, right?
It's, actually, Bruce, who's here somewhere, there he is, hiding behind the bike. He was the one that a couple years ago would continually point it out. He's like, all of your interviews, you look like a parent talking to a child. So now I can actually say, now I interview people with my camera like this. This is my pose. I've gotten very good at sitting very steady for a couple minutes like this.
It's a good quad workout, I think.
It is.
One other thing I just want to mention real quick about women's race on Friday, and this is not because I'm good friends with her, but Courtney McFadden finishing 10th, major surgery, big question mark, comes in and has a solid race, looks really fast, looks, you know, when I pitted for her at Nationals last year, she looked as fast as she did at Nationals last year, in my opinion, so very cool to see.
How long since she just got back? Like 6-8 weeks or something?
Yeah, well, she was like 8 weeks off the bike. No, other than range of motion riding on a trainer, no like real effort that she
put
in.
But it was even, I think I saw her at Sea Otter, and that was her first ride.
Right, and she's done like one cross race, and then...
I think she did a men's Cat 3 race like a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I think she was like third or second. She was like, it was amazing.
And then, you know, comes here, and in that field, that C1 at Jingle is as close as you can get, I think, to a World Cup without actually being a World Cup.
Oh, for sure.
And you get 10th. That's good to see. I think that's going to be good for her this year.
You also get all the extra riders that actually won't be included on Sunday. Like, you know how they say about the Belgian National Championship is, like, really the World Championship?
Yeah.
But for U.S. riders, I think that Friday night race is super important. If you're not going for World Cup selection, you're all racing there. So it's a really, really deep, stacked field.
Yeah, let's talk about the men's race a little bit. Don't want to leave them out.
Yeah, I mean, Lauren Sweek, just a pretty dominant performance. I mean, what else can you say? He looked like Matthew Vanderpool.
He did. If Matthew Vanderpool would just stay in the U20, well, I guess they're both.
They're both the same age, I think.
But again, that was as close as you can get to a World Cup without being a World Cup. I think.
But he's also, I mean, if you talk about Lauren Sweek, he is showing himself. And, you look a couple years ago, and him and his family were always upset that he was being left out in the conversation when it was Vanderpool, when it was Wout van Aert, and they were always like, well, what about Lauren?
Sometimes being called Dieter.
Yeah.
Which is his older brother or his younger brother? His older brother?
Which one? I
don't know which one is older.
I don't even know.
No, but there was a little confusion in that race in the announcing booth about who was in. We were talking to Michael Vandenham, who was racing. So he was in the race, but he was, you know, a little farther back, so he couldn't see the leaders.
Viewing distance back, I suppose.
Yes. And he, after the race, he was like, I'm going by and I'm hearing that Dieter Sweck is winning the race. And I'm thinking, how is he up there? So I just enjoyed that. He's like listening to the announcing, going, how is that guy?
It did seem for a couple of years that, or I mean, especially last year, that maybe like the battle that was going on, or what was it that they said on Sporza, the violence between the two great ones was, Schweik was being left behind, or he was being tolerated for a certain amount of time, and then they would both attack or attack each other, and then Schweik would kind of back out of the room. Per se, but I think this year it may be different. I mean,
I think the problem with that is it makes it sound like it was his choice and it wasn't his choice. He was just, they were just way faster than him. He's like the spark plug. You know, of course, if you ever see him in the lead, you know it's one of the first three laps of the race.
Right. I don't know though. There's been a couple of times where I remember a race last year where Matthew and Wout were going head to head and they sort of switched it off for a lap and Schweik came back into the race and they sort of damn, we kind of mess up here. And it became a three-way race for about another quarter lap, I suppose.
But then I think, Bill, an interesting thing, then we see Quinton Hermans, who's just amazing speed that he has. So we get Schweik and Hermans 1 and 2 on Friday and they follow that up with a 2-3 only behind Vanderpool on Sunday. So, do you guys think they are like the best of the rest? I mean, they certainly are right now. Do you think they can continue that as the best of the rest? I mean, Vanderhaar is going to make an appearance at some point in the season, right? I would think.
I was going to say it's so early to tell, even, you know, because you have all the, you know, in the women's side, you have all the mountain bikers who are coming in off that great form. I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see.
A couple things. Just going back to Ehrmans, that's interesting, is that he raced a lot of mountain bike.
So he's got that fitness all built up.
No, almost the opposite in that he went against the conventional wisdom of how you race cyclocross in Belgium. And they actually brought in blanking on his name, but somebody got a ride on Telenet Fidea for the summer just to race on the road. Not on the cross team, but he got a contract. I'll remember that. It's a name you'll know, that you will know. Oh, Vincent Bastianes.
Okay, yeah.
So Vinny raced with Telenet Fidea just on the road, just for the Kermesses, just for the stage races, because they need, especially for the stage races, you need a minimum amount for your team to compete, because Quentin was going off and racing World Cup mountain bikes.
Right.
Now, if you talk to guys, they will say, you know, first off, we always, when we talk about Americans going to Europe, it's always the, you know, having to adapt to the culture or the change or this or that, and that's why they, you know,
don't do
as well. I was talking to one European who I don't know if he wants it, a conversation out there. I won't say who it was, but he was like, no, the reason the Americans don't do well is they don't race hard, you know, kermesses, and they're on the road and getting that intensity, and that's how Belgians, you know, train in the summer for cyclocross. Say all of that to say, Quentin didn't do that.
Yeah,
he went and raced his mountain bike, gave up his road spot to somebody else,
and then he has his killer weekend to lead off. I saw the
interview with him that was on Cross Magazine, I think. But I was wondering if he has any relation to America, because he seems to have a little bit of an American accent when he was speaking. I don't know if he's just learning from all the Americans coming over.
I don't think so.
He doesn't. No.
He's got a very
He's great. And, you know, he's
it's been 2 days.
He was in Lenzerheide at that World Cup, and it was practice days when we're sort of scouting. Much like the riders scout out the course, the photographers are all out there figuring out how to do stuff and get from one place to the other and what features are going to be cool. And just like this kid with his baseball cap comes up, just starts chatting at me. I'm like, oh, hey. And it took me forever until I was like back in the tent, and then he was changed into his telling that kid. I was like, oh. I was just talking to Quentin out there. Yeah.
Just talking to Quentin out there.
Who's this guy?
Yeah, who's this kid?
But let's talk about Top American Friday, Stephen Hyde. Eighth, right?
I think so, yeah.
Eighth, yeah, Stephen Hyde. Weekend as a whole, what do you think? I mean, I know you were talking about him being the... He's the people's favorite this weekend. Is that what you put on
I put he's the people's champion.
People's
just
champion,
He was, you know, given the little devil horns going across the line.
Gotcha.
Fully unzipped and his Lemmy.
I think he also got some air, I think, over the flyover as well during the race.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, I think Bruce has some photos of that. Hey, they may be popping up on the screen here eventually. Yeah, if you look behind you, those are all of Bruce Buckley's photography. If you're listening, you just go to Bruce Buckley. photography.com. Nailed it.
But
Kerry Werner.
Yeah.
Faster on Sunday.
How was the end? I mean, I'm going to go back to Rochester day two when Kerry won against Hyde. Like, I didn't really get to watch the race except for on Twitter, but did you feel like it was an equally matched battle, or he was kind of not there on Saturday, but and then his form seems to be really good this Friday and Sunday for...
I think Rochester was a race of... You have a race like you were in this past weekend. You're going to have five or six mistakes. Even the winners are going to have... Well, I mean, Vanderpool... Actually, both of them. Katarina as well, I think, had a clean race.
Yep.
Vanderpool dropped his chain once.
Yeah.
He did do that.
So. Every normal people are going to have screw-ups and still have a chance for the podium. That's how it works. Yeah. That's what Sven used to say about the muddy races. Like, it's not about crashing. It's about being the guy that doesn't crash...
Crash the least.
Rochester was not like that at all. Rochester is not, it's a great course, but it's not a technical course. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a couple little things back in the woods, but it's really, for those men and women, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And we saw it in both races. You know, Rochette, that first day, one mistake. She put her foot down in one place, and that gave Noble 4 seconds. And that's how it just stayed the rest of the race. Mm-hmm, so that was it. That
so
was
everyone's
the race.
Just going full speed the entire time.
Yeah. Same with Werner. One mistake, and he wasn't in that top three anymore. Yeah, there's that picture of Hyde getting some air. Good call.
But then, you know, Warner, when he left, I mean, he just timed that perfectly, I think, when you saw him at Rochester.
For Rochester. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think that he would have been with that group. That was my point, on Saturday.
Except that he made a mistake, and then he lost contact with them. Sunday,
meaning that Sunday, it wasn't a surprise that he was up there with them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he timed that perfectly at Rochester. Everybody else kind of looked around like, who's going to go? Nobody went, and he just built that and was able to hold it. I thought it was a great race. And it was amazing that, you know, he's kind of like the forgotten guy out there on Sunday at Jingle. You know, announcers really weren't calling his name a lot. They were calling Hyde every lap and talking about Hyde. Deservedly so. He's national champion, continental champion. He's going to get his name read, you know. But Kerry Warner just sticking around, sneaks up, and is the top American finisher on Sunday. So.
Yeah, and a sprint for 19th, you know, with two other guys.
Yeah.
Going back to that Friday race, who in that field, since it's, you know, not the World Cup field, so we got some other racers in there, who impressed you? You know, when you're looking at the results, Maria, afterwards, who do you think had a good ride?
In terms of the men or the women?
Women. You can do men, too, but I want to get back to the women.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm actually not even that sure what the order was, to be honest. I had a great race.
But, like, who's the first woman you think of?
I mean,
who pops in your head?
I was just thinking about Katie winning. I mean, amazing. And I think that she was impressed with herself, too, for, you know, Katie Compton has been a mentor to Katie and has been on the scene, you know, just dominating for years and years and years, and Katie's been in sort of in that shadow. And for her to come up and just, you know, have an absolutely dominating performance and win is just another stellar start to her season. So I guess I'd be really impressed with Katie. But I guess Courtney McFadden as well. I mean, she's had so much going on this year that with her hip injury and surgery and that she comes back and she's just flying again. I think it's a good story for anyone who deals with injury that you can look to that and see that someone who just perseveres, who is on top of their PT every day, it's like, it's possible, you know, so.
Let's talk about, you know, you said you're happy with your race.
I don't know about that.
No, but what I'm curious about and always interested in is your coming into this, still early in the season, you make the decision to race Friday. Mm-hmm. You don't race Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then you're racing Sunday. First, what's the thinking behind that? And then how are you feeling once Sunday rolls around? I mean, as we talked about, it's an extremely hard course, even with the shorter C1 course.
Well, I mean, you always want to race. I mean, it's like, it's exciting. It's cross season starting. So, and you're making the travel. I mean, it's not as bad for me to travel to Iowa. So, I had, you know, slept in my own bed the night before, which is nice. But, I also talked to my coach, you know, and over the course of the summer, I've done a lot of, road races, especially crits. I've been done like 10-day race series. I did the Intelligentsia Cup. And I talked with my coach, Jen Sharp, from Alp Cycles, and we figured out that was probably the best for me was to do 2 days. I might as well do the Friday because the C1 has more points on offer, and then use Saturday to recoup and then be ready to race again on Sunday. And I actually did the Sven Clinic that was here for the Chai Cross Cup. I did it last year, too. And I asked Sven, I was like, what's everybody doing? Like, are they doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Are they doing Saturday, Sunday? And he was like, everybody is racing on Friday and Sunday. So it sort of confirmed my and Jen's thoughts about what we should do. So I was happy to.
I think it's such a gamble to race that Saturday race. You got to be, especially if you're a good race. I mean, if you are a super fast racer, you're really putting a lot of eggs into that basket.
I would say Tobin Ortenblad, you know, he raced all 3 days hard on Saturday and then I don't think did as well as a lot of people maybe thought on Sunday. I think Tobin's got other goals. I don't think he's really targeting. I mean, everyone wants to do well in a World Cup, don't get me wrong, but I think he's got other things he's thinking about later in the season. My prediction is he really wants to go after nationals, and he's really racing hard right now and not worrying about results. He wants to go deep, chasing people for a full hour, you know, over and over and over again. And but you know, he had a lesser result than we might have seen if he hadn't raced Saturday. Yeah. So
I think the same is maybe true for Sonny, but I think that Sonny Gilbert, who raced Saturday, but I think it paid off for her because Saturday
biggest win she had.
And not that she had a bad race on Sunday, but I think we would expect to see her inside the top 20, and I think she, I'm not sure where she finished, but I think it was back a little bit, but because the points are bumper on, you know, in a World Cup race, I definitely think she made the right decision. And I was sitting watching the race on Saturday, and I was like, man, there's only, you know, 20 people in this race. I could have raced, but, you know, you got to stick with what you decide in the...
Yeah, she was 26 on Sunday.
Yeah.
How did you feel Sunday lining up?
I felt good. I mean, like, it's both frustrating and rewarding that Sunday I had a good race. I didn't really make any mistakes, you know, and I raced as hard as I could. I think we were talking a little bit beforehand, but, like, the difference between believing yourself early on in the race and believing yourself towards the end of the race, I definitely think I believed in myself more towards the end of the race, and that, you know, sort of unlocked a door and I started going faster. And I think that's my only regret. But when you're racing against Olympic, you know, Olympians and professional, you know, I still have a full-time job, you know, I can only put a certain amount of time into racing, and I race as hard as I can, but you know, they're the best in the world. That's it. World champion is there. So I'm happy with how I did, but I'm hoping track goes a little better.
So you talk about that. You talk about the, you know, believing yourself at the beginning and then believing yourself at the end. And that, yeah, that's kind of the natural follow up is that how do you bring that forward now going into this next World Cup in the US?
Well, I think, for me, the track race is kind of special. Like I think Jingle Cross is an awesome race, and I love going there. But it's definitely like that hill, that climb on the backside, just divides the field. It's whoever can climb or whoever, you know, can climb less good. So I definitely lost, you know, a lot of time there. And I feel like track, I've raced it every single year since I was a Cat 4. I started racing, you know, Cat 4, Cat 3, Cat 2, and then UCI last year, the last 2 years. And I just know that course really well. And I think it's not as much of a huge divider. Like, there are shorter run-ups. It's definitely technical and challenging in its own way, but I think it's more of an equal opportunities race. So I finished on the lead lap a lot of times there. So that was kind of frustrating to me because on Friday everyone was flying, and I got out of the car, and I feel like maybe my legs were a bit dead. But Sunday, I got down to want to go, and you know, I was listening to the announcers, which is maybe a mistake, and it felt like they were so much closer to me. And so I was going all in, all in, all in, and all in. And then, you know, I just barely missed out on the lead lap, and that's something that I just want to move beyond. Like, I can't continue to worry about that, and that part is frustrating for sure.
No, that's interesting to hear. It's good, too, that's kind of a goal that's pushing you forward in there, and So, but you have to feel at least year to year you're still progressing
absolutely,
in this sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, last year the course was pretty different in terms of like how much mud was on the course and whatnot. But I think everyone, and I think on the men's side too, it's probably everyone came into Jingle Cross ready. You know, they're flying. You know, mm-hmm. The front of the race, the middle of the race, the back of the race, everybody is going really, really, really fast right now.
Yeah, that's kind of funny because it's, and I think that's, You think for the Americans and a lot of others, this is the kind of the A race of the year. You get that good start. It's in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
When I was speaking with Ellie Easerby last week before the race, he was hoping that the opposite was true. This was his first elite World Cup race, and he was... thinking that he was going really good, and since everybody else was, you know, just starting to ramp up, he'd be able to, you know, sneak in there. But that,
judging by that Matthew Vanderpool performance, I think that might not be
another guy. Vanderpool, another guy who decided to race Mount. Well, I can't say that.
Have
though.
Fun on Mount.
I can't say that though because he was winning road races on Saturday and then podiuming on Sunday for
mountain bike
World Cup.
Do you think that he worries about coming into the season too hot? I mean, It's a huge load of, I don't know, he's certainly coming in hot.
I don't think he worries about it. I think it might be true, but I don't think he worries about it.
I remember after, 2 seasons ago at the end of the season, and there were pictures. It was pretty much the end of February, so after the last Super Prestige or whatever race, season done. And like the next day, there's pictures of Vanderpool out there on his mountain bike.
I remember that. Yeah.
And Jeremy Powers like left a comment on the Instagram saying something like, "Dude, take some time off. You gotta. you need an whatever happened to the off season." And then the best thing was it was Wout Van Aert that left the next comment, and he was like, "Off season's so old school."
These two young jerks.
I was just thinking, oh, Jeremy, they're calling you old. damn kids.
So I'm curious about this. What did you guys think? You know, we always compare. The U.S. is still very young in the cyclocross World Cup scene. So we're still comparing our races over here to European cross races that we see, you know, mostly on video feeds and stuff like that. What do you guys think about the event as a whole? Like the Jingle Weekend, are they stepping up? Are they legit World Cup as far as the show that happens on that weekend?
I mean, I think that the reaction from all the riders is evidence enough to say that, you know, Jingle Cross is definitely at that level. I mean, maybe not in terms of attendance. You know, we're certainly, like, shy of, you know, a Zandhoven or a Nemour sort of in attendance. But all the riders talk about how hard the course is, which is a relief. You know, I haven't ever raced in Europe apart from in Ireland, so, like, one day I'd love to go and do more World Cups. But to know that I have a quality field, you know, a quality race in Jingle Cross that is as hard as any of their races is awesome. But as well, I mean, the Iowa reaction seems to have been awesome. I mean, there's Wout's going to the game.
I was going to mention the game. Like, Zonhoven doesn't have to compete with 75,000 people showing up to watch Iowa versus North Texas.
It was incredible. I've never... So I know that people tailgate, and I actually rode over... I like went on a little spin in the morning on Saturday, and you know I think I was out of the house at 9 a.m. and we were staying right beside the stadium, like we could hear the announcing from the backyard, and you know people are set up in there with like grills with like a sound system and a you know triple X TV, and it's like okay, well this is how do we get these people over to the cyclocross race?
Well, I always remember because I lived there when I was a kid, and it happened there was a some other photographers at the host housing, and they were like, oh yeah, we were pretty much across the street from the stadium, so you know 6 o'clock in the morning and everybody's rolling in. I was like, oh, were they selling parking spots in their front yard? And he was like, oh yeah, $20 a spot.
Yep. Right. Yep. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. But I heard too that they offered everyone who had a ticket to the game.
They did, yes.
That they could come to Jingle Cross and see it. And I definitely saw people.
There were when we pulled up to park, the car right behind us, had their ticket stub or whatever else it was to
that's
get
very
in there.
Cool. I'm glad. That's very cool.
I didn't see Wout in his after the race though. I mean,
did he use his ticket stub to get in?
I don't know.
I think you know Jingle Cross was awesome last year. I legit pulled off a legit work. I think it's even better this year. I thought it was amazing. I've had a great time. I think the event went with very few problems, and it was just amazing.
We cannot put Jingle Cross into our rear view before we speak about Katarina Nash.
Good point.
Yet to mention.
She was so far off the front that we forgot we to even just, talk about her.
We forgot she was even in the race.
Yeah.
I mean, she's amazing. I mean, we did talk about Antonov. I think Antonov reminds me of Katarina Nash with how they ride. You know, they got the same physique and they're really light on the pedals and quick versus a Katie Compton who tends to start slow, fire up the diesel and come from behind, you know, with all her power. Mm-hmm. But Katarina Nash, there's parts where you could see, I think we were talking earlier where, you know, she, by the end, she's kind of just like, she's not pushing it anymore, right? She's not taking chances. She's casually moving around the course and just waiting. I think Antonov started to, Keo started to close it down a bit, and she just kind of turned it on for a little bit, kept that gap, and went on. I mean, she's the best, you know, the best here for sure, and you know, deserved to win. And even when you see a race over in Europe, I mean, she's on the podium basically every time she races.
If she wants to race, she's going to be on the podium.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Anywhere.
And you know, we joke about, you know, I even said it to her jokingly. It was like worst retirement ever. And
yeah.
When I was asking her questions after the race, and she was like, well, I never said I was retiring from cyclocross.
I was going to say.
All I said was that I'm not doing World Cup mountain bike races anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not like she's not taking it serious any, you know.
It's funny that you compare her and Katie, because I feel like Katie made the same move on Friday that Nash made on Sunday, which was to push it. You know, and maybe that's the move
for the course
is, you know, push it over the run up and then climb, you know, and attack that descent, you know. And I think both of them definitely did that Friday and Sunday. And Keo, or Antonov, was, you know, just a little ways back off Katerina in the end. It wasn't, you know, I saw the interview with Katerina said that, you know, if you've got Keo in 10 seconds behind you, you're not letting off the gas, but she certainly looked like, in the same way that Matthew Vanderpoel looked casual towards the end.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, if we go back to the beginning of the race, just because I was able to talk to Eva Lechner as well, who was winning the first few laps, and just, you know, every smart cyclocross prognosticator and you, sitting at home, is like, well, this is obviously a team tactic. They're sending Lechner out there just like it's a road race, you know, softening up the field. And then once Nash is ready, she's going to attack.
She's going to go,
And Eva was like, that's what everybody seems to think, but I was just out there riding hard and thought I had a really good start to the race.
I love her.
She rode the climb the first lap too, I think, or the second. Did she ride? She rode the climb.
The only person that I saw riding the first time and just like crushing it, and we can talk about her, was Sonny Khan.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, you know, it was just rainbow stripes straight up with almost like with a spearhead with everybody else just trailing behind, you know, running.
So Sonny Khan, Bill, what did you think? I mean,
I think that when I talked to her last year, she pretty much said that she doesn't like racing in Iowa.
I agree.
I think that is still true.
And, you know, that said, she got third.
Right.
It's not like, but she was back in the field. She really wasn't a player up at the front until the very end.
This did not match her skill set.
Yeah,
and
no,
I think that if you look at Vanderpoel and you look at Nash, the two winners, and you look at where they won this race, this is not a power rider's course. Just what we were talking about with Katie Compton. It's not coming down that front stretch. It's none of that section near the pits, what I was calling like the front section of the course that's flat where the barrier section is. Where it is, I think, is the descent of Mount Crumpet.
Yeah.
And if you looked at Vanderpoel and you looked at Nash, they were significantly faster coming around those chicanes, coming around those berms, and just like flying, not even touching the brakes.
No.
And nobody else was doing that. I think they were picking up seconds at a time.
It is incredible, because when you're coming down Mount Crumpet, it feels so fast. I mean, it feels like you're flying. But you look at your lap times or from when you practiced to when you actually went down it, and you can gain 10 seconds coming down that hill. You know, 10, 15, so.
And people, I know, like, TV flattens out everything. That is a steep climb. I mean, my calves can tell you that just from having to run up it over and over to try to get to the different spots. I mean, it's a legit grade coming down there.
Heck yeah. I felt trying to film stuff.
And it was bumpy.
I know.
It wasn't, the bottom was extremely bumpy. It wasn't too bad up at the top. You know, normally they would have had people riding it Friday and Saturday. And I think because they didn't have lights on the course, they didn't have the C1 and C2 come down it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the climb on the backside as well, since no one had ridden that. And I just heard some other riders complaining because the grass was so long back there.
Well, on Sunday, everything was completely dusty on Friday, and it was like a desert out there. It was kind of, I was like, am I in Vegas or am I back in Shingle Cross? But then on Sunday, we got rain overnight, and it changed the course for the better, I think. it was just a lot more comfortable. It softened up the ground. There was kind of a line coming up the back in certain sections, but towards the top it did get fairly bumpy. But I was grateful that, you know, there was a little more grip coming down off the backside. I mean, we can talk about how that was the deciding factor for Katie Compton, you know, that crash on... I'm sure she just hit that bump at the bottom and just was trying to follow Nash and just didn't make it. And that was basically it. Can you stay with Nash or can you not? And it didn't really work out for her, but...
Can we talk for a second about Katie Compton's toughness?
Yeah. Yeah. She got back in. She thought she had dislocated a shoulder or had cracked her sternum. And
not only got back in, you know, tough as nails right there, but seemed pissed off.
Yeah, right.
And after the sand, you know, it was actually Magalie Rochette. I have a highlight video. You can sort of see it. She comes around the bend and just, like, hits the turbo just leaves her standing still as she's picking off people trying to get back into the race, you know, after what I think most people would have just called it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, my husband, was in the pit, and he said that, and I don't know about you, Scott, if you were watching, but...
Not for the women's race.
She came in and spent, you know, ten seconds talking to Mark, you know, making sure she was okay, and then just got back on the bike. And actually, afterwards, I didn't even realize that she was so severely injured because I saw her on the rollers chatting.
Yeah,
and
well,
like,
that was...
chilling out.
I had to get to the men's start, and I was sort of waiting around to talk to her, and Mark's like, oh, she's going to be on the rollers in a second here. I'm like, okay.
Okay, she's still still cooling down. Still got to tick those things off.
Did you see her right after the crash carrying her bike up the steps on the flyover?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I mean, you could just see, and it was slow, but she was just
That was the fear, too, because it looked like she hit her head.
Yeah.
Giving herself a concussion.
Yeah. But
and
just,
all.
Like you said, tough as can be, yeah.
Okay. Have Trek. We done the World Cup?
We're going to talk about Trek.
Is there something on the lesson plan that we should talk about other than Trek?
Oh, it's timed out.
Okay. There's a.
You're so wordy.
You haven't memorized your homework?
No, there's a... the lesson plan is such a great name for it, but it's just because it was one of the stock templates on Google Docs.
So we've just always called it the lesson plan.
I actually thought
I never changed the name from lesson plan.
I thought it was like, I was like, wow, Bill put some effort into this Google Doc. Like, it's like Chicago's at the top in red. Yeah. And like, looks pretty good.
Thank you. Thank Google.
I guess we could talk about your Twitter rant about juniors versus
20-somethings.
Oh, yeah. I remember that was on the lesson
that
plan.
That was on my list. So if you all aren't on Twitter, more power to you. But there's... I am all for juniors racing. I want as many juniors out there as possible. I, you know, the part of this when I was getting some pushback is that I pay out of my pocket for juniors in DC to race, you know,
right
through Crosshairs, you know, me, whatever, wherever that division is. You know, there's for DCCX, there's a whole handful that I get out there to race. That being said, it's a very easy group to help.
Mm-hmm.
They're juniors.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. There are needs-based juniors who need help. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of juniors that don't need any help, and they're getting reduced fees, entry fees. My whole argument is, just for my own life, and I know a lot of other people are in this too, the time in life where you need the most help is after college, in your 20s, you know, even if you don't go to college, whatever, when you are finally kicked out of your parents' house and on your own. And these are the people that we want racing bikes. These are like the fastest people out there. Yet if you look at the bell curve, oh boy, I need to like soapbox here.
Yeah. If talking about bell curves, oh my God.
But if you look at the bell curve of racing in the U.S., it has become juniors and masters.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's who races. That's who supports our series. You know, we have to add, you know, different masters fields. I think it's great. I mean, just this year in my series, we bumped it up from, you know, it was always 35, 45, 55. We went 40, 50, 60 because I'd always kid 35. That's like, you know, baby masters.
Baby
right?
Masters.
You know, that's still, you're still fast. You should just, you know, don't hide in the masters. Just race
elite.
The opens. But so that was my thing. I was sort of pushing that out to promoters. I was like, hey, this is great that, you know, we're supporting juniors. I love it. Let's find a way, if you can, to maybe give a break to that portion of racers that can't race every race. And I knew this just from my own team. I had a lot of messengers on my team. I had a lot of guys who were just struggling. And $40-$50, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, they can't afford that.
So they don't race every race. They pick the big races that they want to race.
I think there's like a good crossover here. I've raced with Chicago Women's Elite Cycling this year. It's a composite team in the Chicago area, which takes women racers and tries to elevate them to the pro level so that we can go do big regional races. And I think when we were initially, you know, setting up the group, I think we studied the numbers and the people, you know, we discovered that women were coming. I think maybe this is obvious, but women especially were coming to cycling after they finished college, which is right in that zone of when you don't have enough, you know, don't have quite the expendable income to be spending on a bike plus all your race entry fees. And you know, what we were trying to do was make sure that those racers stay in the sport. And I think, you know, focusing on juniors versus, I think a lot of people lost the point of what you were trying to say.
Yeah, well, it started to become everybody around the country was like, hey, you know, our development team pays fees for all of our juniors.
Right.
And I would just, you know, retweet all of them and go, you are proving my point.
Yeah,
I try to talk about 20-somethings. It always reverts back to juniors. You know, that's the easy way to go. We all want to pat ourselves on the back for helping juniors. Again, awesome, but there's more people out there that we want to get involved in racing.
I certainly remember starting races. You know, when I first started racing, I had a minimum wage job. I was in the U.S. straight from college, and so I just picked up whatever job I could. And, you know, I'm definitely going to races where I'm looking at a junior who's got DI2 and, you know, 303s, and I'm on my borrowed boyfriend at the Times bike. So, and I'm also raced on the Chicago Cut and Crew, which is a team that was sort of based in messenger culture, and a lot of it started out racing, you know, $5 alley cats, and then you know, and as well too, there's a lot of, you know, in the Chicago cycling scene right now, there's certainly a lot of like kids who are, you know, getting to that, you know, 20, 21, 22 era, not necessarily, you know, not all white hipsters, but there's like the fixed gear scene is diverse right now. And I think those are the important people to like bring into sport, because we need fresh blood. We need fresh people.
And on top of that, and it was nice too, because you know, you're always going to get the people coming out of the woodwork on Twitter. So then the, I don't know, we'll call them devil's advocates. I think they were very serious about what they were saying, but they were like, hey, if you don't have your shit together, you know, and can't afford to race, you know, that's your priority should be on finding a job that can pay for this and take it. And I think that's a horrible perspective, because I know plenty of people, I know myself, you know, if all of us in here, I know if you sit in your house for too long and don't get out there and ride your bike or do whatever, do exercise, move, you're going to feel bad. You're going to start feeling depressed. You're going to, you know, and having a goal, having something to strive for, having something out of that daily grind to try to make rent every month, mental health wise is huge.
But I think too, ironically, those comments were coming from like masters racers who have plenty of money to do that.
I mean, I think Bill, you know, to your point, Drew Dillman's a perfect example of that. I mean, here's one of the fastest guys in the country coming out of college, you know, elite rider, if he was still, you know, able to push it, but he just financially, he's got to, you know, kind of do something else. Still racing, obviously raced on Sunday. And we need more people to support him. So, or people like him, I mean, men and women. And, you know, like, I'm pitting for him because he used to be on my team, you know, and for free. And I told him, don't pay me. Just, I want you to do this, right? You know, and we just got to have more of that, because they're really fast and they're really where we want to be.
There are other solutions out there. My one solution that I offered, especially to all of the series and development programs that were, you know, call an ambulance because they hurt their arm patting themselves on the back, wanted to tell me that they were giving free entry to juniors. I said, that's awesome. Why don't you put out there as well, if you would like to donate that entry to someone else, you know, and then have a lottery or have a sign-up. It doesn't, you know, make it anonymous or however you want to do it, and put it out there that there are those sort of scholarship opportunities available. Sure.
Sure. I think too, like in the Chicago area, there's certainly a lot of, I think the Tri-Cross Cup has been successful because they have kept that entry level racing relatively cheap. I know that you guys are dealing with a different situation out east.
For us, we're at $29 still.
Yeah, so that's about the same. Yeah. 25, I think, is for the Tri-Cross Cup.
We're mid-Atlantic. We're reasonable there. You get farther up north, and it's
30,
definitely it gets a lot more expensive fast.
Yeah, for sure. But it's a really hard thing to address because it's sort of like, in some ways, do people want to come forward and be like, please, you know, give me a free entry? But
that's what I was saying. You have to find some way that they're not doing that.
Yeah, and it's not some kind of condescending.
Right.
Yeah. I definitely think, so when I joined the Chicago Cotton Crew, we had a system of, we had team funds. So that was one of the reasons I was able to race. But we all had to hustle in order. It's sort of easier to ask for money for your team than it is to ask for money for yourself. So we had a certain dollar amount each. I think we had 15 or 20 riders at the most. And, you know, if you needed team funds, you said yes. And if you don't need team funds, you say, no, I'm good. And that goes back to the rest of the team. So that we had some, you know, fights over who got what. But
yeah, no, that's huge. We do a little bit of that as well, too. I think part of how cycling has, I think cities are different. You know, there are more teams out there, but how cycling really has changed over the years is that the team structure and the club structure is diminished a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people out there just out there on their own riding, racing.
Yeah. I don't know about Michigan, but I think Chicago has a fairly strong team structure, or like I think there are a lot of really good teams in the area.
You mean in cycling in general?
In cycling
or just
in
cross?
General, cross is the big one that's growing. You know, there's a lot of teams that have come up that are more focused on cross only. I feel like the road is where we're getting light here in terms of riders.
We have a bunch of loosely organized people that all wear the same kit, and that's it.
Oh no, we
and they call it a team. Yeah, that's it.
I think people come in like almost expecting these days in Chicago. I don't know if people agree with me here, but like you'll have to join a team straight away.
Well, you used to. For USA Cycling, you used to, when it was USCF, you had to join a team to race.
Right.
Or you'd pay an unattached rider fee.
I think maybe the biggest issue for Chicago is going back to the Chicago Women's Elite Cycling, or even myself this year. Like I was racing on a local team, and this year I'm moving on to race with the Meteor Power by Allied, which is with my good friend Nicole Mertz. But moving up to that next level is the issue, and I guess it happens in that range of 25 to 30 when you're sort of stable enough to pay for bikes, to pay for, you know, or lucky enough to be sponsored. And
I didn't realize you and Nicole were racing
together. So Nicole and I are, we were racing together on the Meteor Power by Allied.
Nice.
We went to big races together last year. She's got really good connections to Trek. Her boyfriend, Kip, is from Watertown, which is right down the road. So we just had a great time together. And she also raced with my friend Daphne, sitting in the audience on Velo Classic. So she's, even though she's from Minnesota, she still comes down and races with us. So I'm really excited about that. But that's the hard thing, is moving on from those local teams or that local level, or getting that support to move. You know, it's... You know, they say it takes a village or whatever, but it really does.
Anything else in the lesson plan? I need to move away from this one.
It's controversial.
Do you want to move on to Trek? There is one more thing. Or do you want to move on to Trek?
Or what's the other thing?
Women hopping barriers.
Oh,
this
weekend,
we saw a couple examples of that. You won in the EKZ race, right?
I have already...
Is it queued up for the video?
No, but I was just looking at my phone.
Just pass around
Bill's
phone.
Remember what her name is.
And then, of course, Ellen Noble on Friday at Jingle
Florina?
Cross.
Florina?
There's a name that's in my head. I know it's not her because I'm getting her confused with somebody else.
But, I mean, it was just a matter of time, right? I mean, we were all... It was just one of those things.
Right?
It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, and we've all just kind of been waiting for it. And they're going to get better and better, and we're just going to see more and more. And then in 5 years... It won't even be a thing. They'll all be doing it. You know.
Florina Gloss.
Yeah.
There you go.
She responded to your...
Yeah, it was funny. So I put up a little video of Ellen Noble just talking to her about riding the barriers and just how, you know, Ellen's awesome and she's always kind of got this little... she's got her goals and she's sort of got her things that she wants to push out there, and that's one of them, that this is something that's just part of racing. She wanted to do it. It wasn't, you know, this is something women can do. It was, this is something I can do that they will give me an advantage in the race. So it's a skill I wanted to learn and be able to do during the races. And it's the exact same progression that we saw with the men. It, 5 years ago, it was a novelty. Every look now at your Instagram feeds and how many Instagram feeds are like, oh my God, look at them riding the barriers. It's not there because it is a necessary skill.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing now that's going to happen in women's racing. And it's pretty awesome.
I think there's a lot of practice that has been going on behind the scenes. But
I think so too. I know it has.
I know that I've been, I mean, I'm nowhere near getting to get over the barriers, but like that's certainly like, you know, when you set goals for yourself at the beginning of the season, or maybe a, you know, a 3-year goal or whatever, it's like, I want to be able to do that. And now Ellen Noble has done it, it's like, I'm actually going to have to be able to do that.
Right,
so
right, exactly.
That's right. Or at least have it in your arsenal.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I love. And you look at, I mean, going to the men, but you look at Wout van Aert, who doesn't do it.
Did he do it on...
He can.
He can.
Did he do it on the World Cup? I thought I saw him jumping this weekend. But
he
maybe.
Will when it's necessary.
Yeah,
but and those were really fast barriers, so it was necessary. But if it's unnecessary and he's just as fast off, and he crashed so hard a couple years ago and screwed himself up.
Lars van der Haar the same, right? He stopped hopping barriers for a little bit because he had a really bad crash.
But so, no, I think it was great. It was awesome. Great to see. It was great that
maybe
you know,
we'll see some more of it this weekend.
It got people jazzed about it. And
I think that Magali Rochette as well has an inner quiver, but hasn't.
And so we don't get the emails. We know that Pauline Ferrand-Prevot has done it in a race in the past as well.
For sure,
But I think just once. I think she just, it might have been just one or two laps where Ellen was pretty consistent for the whole race.
Oh, yeah, she did it all race,
All right, Trek. That's it.
Coming up.
Coming up.
Not as much as I wanted to think there were three races, and I think everybody else did because it was Jingle Cross had three races, just two.
That might be the big question. What is everybody doing on Saturday? What are you doing on Saturday?
It's kind of crazy. So Friday, we have a C2 on Friday.
Yep.
Nothing on Saturday.
Nothing UCI.
Nothing UCI. A lot of amateur races. It's going to be great racing out there. And then the World Cup on Sunday.
Isn't Saturday when the...
is that the Legends race?
The Jens.
Yeah.
Jens and...
is it the Legends race on Friday
and Sven?
Evening? Friday. Because... So I'm assisting putting on a clinic on Friday, which is going to be at 6 o'clock for junior girls.
I'm going to get in trouble for not knowing this. Look, I'm pulling up the Trek CXC Cup app.
Oh, I just installed that today.
I also installed it. I haven't done anything with it yet. But we're putting on a clinic on Friday night, and I think we were not conflicting, but we had to wait until after the clinics with. I'm going to plug this because.
Please
go for it. Absolutely.
I will get this up tomorrow.
We have
yes, he will.
Had Katie Antonocchio do a clinic for junior girls for the past 4 years, and we had Katie Compton the first year, and we're Katie is back this year. So our clinics are presented by Park Tools. So I just want to give them a shout out. And but I think we're conflicting with the Legends race, or we're happening right after they finish.
When is your clinic?
6 p.m. on Friday, and it's free to juniors, which maybe I should charge them. But just to try, it's especially, it's more.
You are not conflicting.
But we're happening after it.
You're happening right after.
Yeah, exactly.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a good time. Everybody will hang out and watch the.
Oh, yeah.
Watch you teach the junior girls.
I will be corralling as Katie and Katie. Will be and Nicole will be teaching. So
yeah, interesting. These are definitely day off of work races here for these the C2.
Yeah,
the, women are at 2:30 and then the men are at 3:45.
Yeah,
I think you know we've talked about this before, Bill. Jingle Cross tomorrow. I'm sorry, Cross Vegas.
It's tomorrow.
You know, that was going to be the sleeper race, right? We talked about that. Turns out that's going to be stacked probably, right?
Yeah, I've been equating it to what we used to have in the D.C. area in that we had our series and we have all of our races, as I already bragged about it, are really close where we don't have to travel for, you know, over an hour for any race. And then we had one outlier, this one race. It was like 2 hours or a little over 2 hours away. Nobody wanted to go to this race. And everybody, you look at the registration, nobody's registered. Nobody's registered. Nobody's registered. And then that one person who says, I'm stealing points for the series.
And then, boom!
And they register. And then everybody else is like, now we have to go race that. Like,
right.
That's kind of what's happening with Cross Vegas. It seemed like nobody was going, oh, we'll skip it and we'll just do track. And now it seems like it's just building and building and it's going to be a...
But like what we mentioned before, I think on the last show, is this then opens up Friday, because no, yep. probably mm-hmm. no one's going to race Wednesday, Friday.
There is a bigger name rider who is going to Vegas who's told me that specifically. He said, why wouldn't you go race a C1 and skip the C2 at Trek? That gives you another day. You're still going to be able to do the World Cup, and you get to... do a C1.
Yeah. So, but somebody can, you know, sneak in with that C2 now, and we might see a good race Friday. I'm hoping.
But you do have to go to Vegas, I guess. That's the issue.
That's a lot. No, but like you said, you take one or two bikes. You don't worry about all your backup stuff and everything. You crash it with one or two bikes, maybe your mechanic. You go down there and you come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ellen Noble had a picture of her flight in her row. It's her... Tom Hopper
and Jeremy.
And Jeremy. Yeah. So I'm sure they all brought.
Yeah, and Spencer's probably behind him.
Did Spencer go? Do you know?
I think I don't know.
I don't know if he's.
I got to text his dad.
I guess we'll see.
So. But Friday night, I got to tell you the Spencer's. Friday night while Spencer's racing, so in case people don't know, Spencer raced on my team for a couple years just before he signed with them. And so I know his dad, and Friday night, his dad is texting me because there was no stream, right? He's like,
yeah, this is Spencer Petrov,
Spencer
who's
Petrov
racing for Rafa Aspire.
Aspire, right, Rafa Aspire.
Jeremy.
He's like, how's Spencer doing? What place is he in? How far is he from 15th? Which is where you get points, right? How far is he from 15th? What's going on? Can you send me a video? Yes, John.
While you were in the pits?
Yes, John. No, I wasn't pitting
that
race. Yes, John. Here you go. No, it was fun. That gave me like someone to keep track with. So anyways.
Yeah, so Lawrence Zwick will race that.
On Friday? Are you...
the C2 on Friday.
Lawrence Zwick, Quentin Hermans.
I think the men's race has majority... I looked at the start list before you came. I think the men's race has majority USA riders plus one or two of the international riders. But the women's race appears to have a few more gamblers who are going... I don't think Santa Kent or... Maybe it's because riders have obligations for Interbike that they're going to go down, but...
Yeah, I think that's correct.
And then Friday's race, I didn't look at the men's field for Trek, but I mean there's certainly 35 or 40 women who are signed up on Friday for that C2, so hopefully it'll still be pretty.
Yeah. So, and then the World Cup on Sunday, here's a question for you. Is that course going to slow Vanderpool down at all?
No.
I was going to say, because I think you wrote on the lesson plan, like, you know...
She's
we'll
calling
do
it the lesson plan, Bill. Isn't that
I like that. This is good. She can come back.
Why would do better, you know, because of the technicality of the... of
I was
Trek
just like,
I was going to say, like, I don't know
that's
his forte in... I mean, like, both of them are technically excellent riders, but I think... Vanderpool would be...
But I think at Jingle we have these long stretches where Matthew just can lay down the watts and just kind of take off and get these huge speeds. I
think
don't know.
That Wout is technically more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he gets dinged a little for not being as good technically.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's not as flashy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I would
think
agree.
That you look back at the World Championship, I mean, everybody wants to talk about green tires. One of the most important things was if you look at the lines that Wout was taking, especially on that descent versus
mm-hmm.
what Vanderpool,
mm-hmm.
who was flatting left and right, were taking, they were much better. They were higher. They mm-hmm. were a smarter line. And I think I think he rides straighter up.
He seems to ride with a sort of different maturity level. I mean, I'm not going to call Matthew immature or anything, but it does seem to have that.
He doesn't get rattled.
Level
he doesn't
head.
Get rattled.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
He did look
exactly
a little
right.
rattled on Sunday with how his performance was going.
That is true. Absolutely.
And Matthew was the one who looked smooth. But
yeah. Oh, I agree. And and you know, I think we'd all get rattled if we were like, all right, I don't feel great, and look behind you, and there are 40 people just like,
can
hey, wherever you go, I'm going, and we're not going to pass you.
It looked like he was pulling the entire field. He's on the front of like 40 guys. So yeah, that was crazy.
But that's the thing that he's never been able to solve with Vanderpool is that he races the way Sven raced. You know, the way that all those guys race. Mm-hmm. Sit in a couple laps, wait, bide your time, and go. We've talked about this a lot. Vanderpool is that Zdenek Stibar school of, it's a race. We're going.
Off we go. All right. Well, do we want to do predictions?
Sure.
Oh, God.
Bill, you go first. Predictions, Sunday. Where it's like, oh, God.
Well, I'm going first, so I'm just going to go scratch on both.
What?
Yeah, I'm going Nash and Vanderpool.
Oh, wow.
Repeating.
I think for the women's race, I'm going to, there's no way I wouldn't put my money on Katie Kyo Antono. I think that's a super important race for her. I mean, I know it's Katie Compton's Trek as a sponsor, and it's like a home race for her, but it literally is a home race for Katie Kyo, so I'm going to put my money on her.
Won a race there last year.
Yeah,
so she knows
how
to win there.
It's her hometown.
It's her hometown. She's got the...
Yeah.
In Wisconsin,
it's one big hometown.
But then, I don't know. I mean, would it be too much to put money on Quentin Hermans doing?
No.
I don't think so.
No way. Not at all.
You know, that's kind of a hometown race for them. They've been living there since they arrived almost 2 weeks ago.
I'm sure Sven is putting a little pressure on, too, for getting that. Because they all raced the Friday night last year, and then... what's the French right? Steve Chanel.
There was five Telenet riders, and he ended up on top. This is something we haven't talked about. We were talking about beforehand that you just brought up with Quentin Hermans. You know, you're talking about him taking the win. So being the really almost the leader of that team now. Lars Vanderhaar, the reason he signed there was so he could be a leader of a team and have a team. You know, they no longer have Tom Mason, who was kind of the leader of that team. And now all of a sudden we have a kid first year out of the U23s. Mm-hmm. This is Quentin Hermans' first elite year.
And
he's already sort of putting himself in that position as
it's gonna top be a guy on the,
you know, the Yankees of cyclocross.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Toon Aerts is maybe having a slower start. And I think maybe the same for Lars.
Like, well, you figure with Tony, he's coming off of
his first race back from that crash.
Exactly. He's recovering from that.
And even Vanderhaar didn't do a full season, right? Because he was hurt.
Yeah.
He had that knee issue before. Yeah,
So I think both of them are maybe focusing on, you know, the end of the season. You know, I think that maybe it's like youthful exuberance to come in so hot to the start of the World Cup, but. I mean, I was...
Was Tone wearing his European... Isn't he the European champion?
Yeah, I think he was on...
Was he wearing that... I don't think he was wearing that kit.
I don't think he was. And they were clear that of the... You know, at the team manager's meeting for the UCI, it was like, you must wear these in this order, you know? I think that's why Hyde was in the Continental one. Yeah. Yeah, the Pan Am one. So you want to hear my prediction?
Katie Compton did not wear the Pan Am jersey on Sunday.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You're right. She did not.
I noticed. Ooh.
All right, so I'm going to go with Wout for Trek.
I like it.
I think he's a problem solver, right? I think he's going to race much better. We're going to see a completely different Wout Van Aert. And if any problems come up with Matthew, I think he's going to be there to take advantage of it, and I think we'll see him win. And for the women, I'm going to pick Eva Lechner.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I like her. I like the Trek course for her style. I like it. The punchy little stuff, real steep punchy climbs and stuff, I think she's going to do well on. And I'm kind of going out there with that one, but I'm going to pick her, yeah.
All right, I like it. You're going to look like a genius.
Yeah, I know.
I already got my correct predictions out of the way. I called the men's races for Schwick and Vermeersch.
Oh, you did?
So I'm done.
One and done.
All right. I think we should get, if anybody has any questions, we do that really quickly. If not, we should just start wrapping this up.
Yeah, cool. Anybody? Questions?
Anything you want to know about cyclocross?
Anybody going to Trek? Oh,
yeah,
beautiful. That's awesome. That's like over half the people here.
All right. Well, thank you all for showing up.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you for Rafa for having us out. Maria, thanks for being our guest. It was awesome to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Wonderful. And
Scott,
what?
Where can people get in touch with you?
On Twitter, at BikeShopCX or at CyclocrossNet. If you want to send in tech questions to our Cyclocross Tech Show, it is BikeShopShow@gmail.com, and we will answer your tech questions on the show.
All right. Before I get to Maria, tell me one wide-angle podium show that people should listen to other than this one and yours.
And Slow Ride.
You can mention them.
Honest Bicycle Program. Boom.
Honest Bicycle Program. Good call. Maria, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at ThoughtsDrawn, the underscore in the middle, and on Instagram at _Marlar_.
Woo.
But you can also follow the team at the Facebook. We're under Meteor Racing, powered by Allied. So.
A wide-angle podium podcast other than our two shows you've listened to.
They got to hang out. They're killing it lately.
We got to hang out.
Sorry.
Did you listen to the most recent one?
With Fred Armisen?
Yes.
I did.
Oh, so good.
I thought the cutest part was them discussing, like, beforehand, I think Abby couldn't make it to that podcast recording,
yes.
And sort of Annalise is like, I'm so sorry that I had the best podcast of the year, but we had to. So I love those guys. I think they're really great.
That was a fun one to listen to. I also enjoyed her, you know, really commiserating with, not commiserating, like they were on the same level as friends of Slater Kinney.
Exactly.
That was good.
So, Bill, right, where do people get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me at CXHairs on Instagram and on Twitter. And if you want to yell at me about junior racing, you can do that at feedback.
At MrDavidPallon at gmail.com.
Feedback at CXHairs.com. We didn't even mention David. Oh, he's going to feel bad.
I know. Well, we just did.
Okay.
Sorry, David.
We'll see you soon. All right. Thanks. I think that's it.